Bonnie.
I'll try.
Okay, Parshat. Parshat Vayishlach. Now, there's a story in the Parshat. We all know the story very well. Nevertheless, it is a strange story. And somehow we have to recover from the fact that we know it so well and think of it truly as a strange story. And that is the story which begins with the words, Vayivater Yaakov Levado. And Yaakov found himself left alone. He was extra. He was Yoter Levado. He was by himself. Vayavek Ishimo Ad Alot HaShachar. And he wrestled with a man. I mean, that's, you know, in Hebrew today, itafkut, I think, is wrestling. But it doesn't matter. It's something like that, whatever that word means. Rashi indicates, first of all, Rashi says, Vayivater Yaakov. Rashi doesn't understand how it is possible that Yaakov Avinu, who came with his four wives and all their children, and that's the only place that there was. There was just wherever they were. How could he be suddenly left alone? So Rashi says, quoting the Gemara, Rashi says, Shechach pachim ktanim v'chazar alehem. He forgot small containers on the other side, where he came from, where the place from which he came, and he went to find them. He went back to find them, so that Rashi is sort of telling us that this is an accidental event. I mean, you could make a lot of, think a lot about Pachim Ketanim, but according to Rashi, there was no particular reason, right? Then Rashi explains quite at length what the word Vayeavek might mean. This is a problem of, which begins with the words Menachem Peresh. Menachem is Menachem ben Saruk. And you know that Menachem ben Saruk wrote a dictionary. He lived in Spain. You know, Menachem, there's a street nearby this building called Rehov Menachem ben Saruk, which is named after, it's like the streets of the grammarians. There are streets of what we call Rishonim and streets we call grammarians. Rashi had a copy of the Machberet Menachem on his desk. You know, I sound like an advertisement for the museum. I mean, it may have been in his bookcase. But in any event, he used it all the time. And he gave it a tremendous amount of credibility. So he says, Menachem Peresh Vayitaper Ish. Now you can look it up. Vayitaper. It's like afar. Ish. Lashon avak. That afer, dust, and avak also is a word for dust. So that's what they rolled around in the dust. That's what Rashi says. And after a long explanation, you look towards the end of that Rashi. Rashi says, "Pershu Rabbeinu Zal Shu Saro Shel Esav," that this angel is Saro Shel Esav. Saro either means somehow he has dominion over Esav, or he represents Esav. But one thing is clear. Well, if you ask a child in the street, right, any child, a child goes to a cheder, a child goes to a more modern school, who did Yaakov fight with? They will all say, Saro Shel Esav, in one form or another. So that this commentary, or this comment by Rashi, became the standard interpretation. Yaakov is having a fight with Esav. Even though the Pasuk says Vayavek Ish Imo. We know that the word Ish in the Hebrew of the Rambam, right, also meant Malach. Right, there are Malachim, angels, called Ishim, that the Rambam says. Right, so Ish could mean either a man, like a neutral kind of man, without telling you who that is, and another possibility is that Ish means an angel. So Rashi saying Saro Shel Esav is sort of giving us the name of the angel. Which angel is it? It's the angel that is called Saro Shel Yosef. Vayavek Ishivo Ad Alot HaShachar. What is Ad Alot HaShachar? This Rashi doesn't explain. I know that Alot HaShachar means dawn. But what does dawn have to do with what the story is? Why would anything stop when there is Alot HaShachar? Vayarki Lo Yuchalo. And he, the Ish, the angel, the Saroshel Esav, was not able to emerge victorious in this battle with Yaakov. Vayagav b'kaf yerecho, v'takav kach yerech Yaakov b'heyavto imo. So he grabbed onto Yaakov's heel, and he held on to it, right? V'takav kach yerech Yaakov b'heyavto imo. He held onto his leg somehow, right? Okay, next question. This Rashi is also technical. Be'avko imo. Vayomer shlachani ki Allah hashachar. And the angel says to him something that is odd. Send me, let me out of here ki Allah hashachar. Ki Allah hashachar means the dawn. It's the dawn has come. That's a meaningless statement. Vayomer lo eshlachacha. I will not send you unless you bless me. What does this have to do with anything? Who said that the angel can give a blessing? Who says that the angel is carrying around the blessing that he can give away? So Rashi explains as follows. Rashi says, Ki Allah Shachar, remember the question we had? Sarich ani lomar shira bayom. Now this is really remarkable. Rashi, which about most people know the Rashi, but if you learn Parshat HaShavua, it's a well-known Rashi, but it makes very little sense to me. The angels had to sing in the morning. We imitate when we say Kadosh, 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 Bofadim, B'chayat HaKodesh, B'ash Kadom, Mitasim, L'Matzlafim, and they say Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. And this is what the angel was talking about. He had to go to the Beit HaMikdash Bashamayim and sing the praises of God. That was his job in the morning. So that the angel says to Yaakov, look, me fighting with you, Yaakov, is only a part-time job. I don't do this all the time, but what I do every day is sing the praises of God. And therefore I can't spend any more time fooling around here wrestling with Yaakov in order to prove something or other which we have no idea as yet what it might be. Rashi explains the second part, Ki Ibirachtani, also in a very odd way. Not odd, like it doesn't make sense, but odd that it connects with difficulty to the Pasuk. Ki Ibirachtani. Hodali al abrachot, lo yobar ocha brachot ba'u lecha be'akeva uvirviya. Acha berchani yavi, slicha. Hodali al abrachot sheberchani yavi. Dr. Letterman will explain to you why it is that when you look at something very close, it gets cockeyed. Well, I can't even explain it to you. But you get more professional explanation. Sheberchani Yavisha Esav Ma'arer Aleihem. Somehow Yaakov wanted to straighten out something that was on his mind, according to Rashi. That after all, he did steal the blessings. After all, there was a certain amount of duplicity involved. It wasn't that there was a straightforward thing. So Yaakov is using this opportunity where Saroshel Esav wants something from him. What does he want from him? Release. In order to go and sing the praises of God. And Yaakov says, okay, I will release you if you give me the bracha. Meaning, if you admit or announce or comply with the fact that the bracha that my father gave to me was really my bracha, right? She'esav ma'arer alehem. Okay? Now we're up to Pasuk of Tet. Vayomer lo Yaakov ye'amer ol shimcha Ki im Yisrael ki sarita melukim v'manashim v'tuchal. So I think he sort of gives him a bracha. He gives a new bracha. And the new bracha is that your name is Yisrael. He was Yaakov, now to become Yisrael, differentiated from Avram Avinu, as you know. Avram became Avraham in every case, and the Gemara says that it's also to call him Avram after the name change. But when it came to Yaakov, the name change was facultative. Sometimes Yaakov is used, and sometimes Yisrael is used, right? That remains to be seen, but we can remind ourselves nonetheless. Vayishal Yaakov Yomer Hagida Nashimecha. For some reason, Yaakov then turns to the angel who renamed him and said, Hagida Nashimecha, tell me your name. Vayomer Lama Zetishali Shmi Vayevarech Oto Sham. Why do you ask for my name? And he blessed him there. Vayikra Yaakov Sheba Makom Peniel. A naming of a place, Peniel, which is related to the words Pana or Panim, Vatilatzel Nafshi. Vayizrach lo Hashemesh ka'asher avar et Penuel. Vayizrach lo Hashemesh. Right? Vayizrach lo. So Rashi says, if you look at Pasuk Lamed Bet, Vayizrach lo Hashemesh l'shon b'nei Adam hu. It's the way people talk. When we got to some place, people say, then, you know, the sun came up. The sun was as though there was a connection. There was a connection between the fact that we came to that place and the sun, and that the sun rose. Zel pshuto, Rashi says. That's the obvious meaning of this pasuk, of Midrash Agadah, Beizrach lo litzorcho, lerapot et tzilato, to cure him from his limping. That was what remained of the fight between him and the angel. Kabadetema shemesh tzedaka umarpe biknafea, v'otan shaot shemihara. Otan sha'ot shemihara lishkoa bishvilot sheyatza mi-Be'er Sheva mihara lizroch bishvilot. So Rashi somehow is connecting the shkia of Be'er Sheva, which the sun went down early, to the zricha now, where the sun comes up early. Mihara lizroch bishvilot v'hutzoleya. That's what the pasuk says. He was limping. Rashi says, V'ahu ayat soleya kishezarcha Hashemesh. He was limping when the sun came up. Finally, the last pasuk says, pasuk lavigimel again lo yochlu b'nei Yisrael gira nashe asher al kaf ayerech ad ayom hazeh ki naga bekaf yerech Yaakov b'gira nashe. And then there's a pasuk that talks about a minhag. I mean, hag, as opposed to a halacha, is not based on an authoritative pronouncement. It doesn't come from the Sanhedrin. It doesn't come from the chief rabbinate. It comes from the people. The people decided that they should commemorate this event that took place between Yaakov and Sarah Shel Esav, even though it's not perfectly clear why this event was important. We know that the renaming of Yaakov took place again in this parasha, right? God renames Yaakov Yisrael, so that the naming that he received here is not clear. And the bracha that he received, that somehow he was not a criminal, is something that he could have received from his father, from his grandfather. It didn't have to come from the angel. So I'm not sure exactly what the fact that he limped afterwards, what that means, what that has to do with anything. Why would I want to commemorate the fact that Yaakov Avinu, after all, we're not talking about eating kosher food now, right? Everybody was eating non-kosher food. Right? So that to avoid eating the kira nasheh, the sciatic nerve or vein or whatever it might be, I'm not good on practical things. Whatever it was that people didn't eat, it wasn't from a sense of the kind of kashrus that we know about, where there is kosher meat and unkosher meat, and maybe things connected to unkosher meat are also unkosher, because everybody ate unkosher meat, but the minhag was not to eat the gira nasheh. And the pasuk says, gira nasheh ashal kafa yarecha di yom hazeh, gira gav kaf yarech yakov bi gira nasheh. Because somehow Gira Nasheh was involved in this battle, and this battle was a great victory for Yaakov, and it's hard for us to understand what the great victory of Yaakov over Saroshel Esav was. Of course, it's true that later on, when Yaakov comes into frontal confrontation with Esav, Esav backs down. So in the Shakespearean vein, you know what I mean? Like, if you think backwards, you think, so like Shakespeare, you know, Shakespeare had this way, like he was killing everybody in the play, because, you know, those were the kind of good effects you could have in those days. You know, he was dying. So then there was an intermission. And then during the intermission, a few clowns come out, and basically they clown around, but they say, don't worry, everybody is dead, but somebody will be left, or they'll be all right. Don't leave the Globe Theater just yet. So in this story, you have something like that going on. Here's Yaakov. Yaakov is being beaten down by everybody. Right? First he's beaten down by Esav, chases him out of the country. His parents say, you better get out of the country, don't marry somebody who lives in Canaan. In Aram Naharaim, he had to deal with Laban and Betuel and Rachel and Leah. I mean, he really comes from a bad place. Not a bad place, but, you know, it's not Yaakov, the star of Jewish history. It's something else. And then, through this story, there's a transformation. Yaakov becomes a winner. The one who knows what to ask for. The one who knows how to get whatever it is he needs. And he's totally changed when he comes in and confronts Esav. He's not afraid. I mean, the same Yaakov who ran away from Eretz Canaan because of his fear of his brother no longer seems to be afraid. And therefore, we're left with this general question, like, what happened? What was this transformation that took place? And why did it have to take place in this way? I mean, if there's an answer to that question. Then there are a couple of details, right? There's Alot HaShachar and Alot HaShachar. There's Bracha. We saw the words which might be important in understanding the big question, which is, again, why did the transformation of Yaakov from being a 90-pound weakling to Yaakov in charge of the world, why did it take place in this way with the wrestling with Saroshel Esav? What meaning is there that we could kind of extract from this story, which helps us to understand the development of Yaakov from the old Yaakov to the new Yaakov? So to understand that, I bring two sources. One is a Mishnah in Chulin, a Mishnah at the end of Chulin about the Gira Nasheh. And the other is an interpretation of Rav Kook of an Agadata in the Gemara. First, the Mishnah. First, do you see it on the sheet? Mm-hmm. So he says, Noeg b'tahorah, they don't know Heg b'tameah. This Isur of Gira Nasheh, which is the topic of the Mishnah. But the Mishnah is talking about it halakhically. Where is it exactly? And how do you cut it out? And how much do you have to cut out? All of that. So the Mishnah then says, Noheg b'torah. Gira nasheh is only a deficiency in a kosher animal. Right? Ve'eino noheg b'tmeah, but not in a non-kosher animal. Rabbi Yehuda omer, af b'tmeah. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, it doesn't matter, kosher animal, non-kosher animal, you're not allowed to eat the Gedat Nasheh. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Halo mi bnei Yaakov nesa Gedat Nasheh, v'adayin behemat t'me'a muteret lahem. So Rabbi Yehuda says, I don't understand your position. In the time of Yaakov Avinu, they stopped eating the Gedat Nasheh. But they were eating behemat me'a. They were eating non-tamei meat. There was no such thing as kosher meat. Amrulo, so they said to him, "B'sinai ne'emar ela sheh nechtav b'mkomo," which could mean, yes, it's true. You have to understand that the prohibition of Gedat Nasheh started at Har Sinai when God gave the Torah to Bnei Yisrael. So part of the Torah was kosher, non-kosher. In the kosher, non-kosher section, there appeared the Gedat Nasheh. And the Torah said, you can't eat the Gedat Nasheh, right? But you can't eat the Gedat Nasheh from an animal that you could eat. I mean, of course, you can't eat the Gedat Nasheh from a non-kosher animal, because you can't eat anything in a non-kosher animal. So whether the historical event with Yaakov and Sarosh El Esav would have been irrelevant. It's only relevant for a kosher animal. In that kosher animal, you're not allowed to eat the Gedat Nasheh. That's the conclusion. That's the conclusion of the Mishnah against Rabbi Yehuda. So you see that this idea that you could create a mitzvah, that you create a mitzvah for Har Sinai, is attacked in the Mishnah. A mitzvah is only something that comes from God. It's not something that, I mean, there are other opinions, yes, but that's what this Mishnah seems to say. The two mitzvot that are found in the book of Bereishit, the two mitzvot that are found in the book of Bereishit that apply to this rule are Brit Milah and Gedat Nasheh. Right? Brit Milah and Gedat Nasheh, but both of these mitzvot, the Torah Baal Peh says, they were only mitzvot when the Torah was given at Har Sinai. Even though it seems that Brit Milah was also done by the Jews in Mitzrayim, and when they left Mitzrayim, they didn't do the Brit Milah, which is the same as saying that they did it. Right? You know, as if they couldn't do it, but that was only because they wanted to do it or thought they should do it. And when it comes to Brit Milah, there's a pasuk in Vayikra, right? In Tazria, in the parish of Tazria, Uvayom Hashmini Yimol Bisar Arlato. So there, clearly, even if there was a minute to do Mila before, there is a direct statement in the Torah at Har Sinai, from Har Sinai, that Biyom Hashmini Yimol Bisar Arlato. So this problem is an interesting problem. Or is an interesting question. Did the Jews keep Gedat Nasheh? Did they think it's a mitzvah? What did they think it's a mitzvah? What did the sons of Yaakov do? I mean, all this is very interesting. But in the Perush HaMishnah of the Rambam, which we're now going to look at, he says this, Ein halacha k'Rav Yehuda, the third line, Ein halacha k'Rav Yehuda, v'sim libcha Leklal Hagadol Hazeh Hamavol Murabah Mishnah. So pay attention to the great rule that is found in this Mishnah. V'hu Amaram Misinai Ne'ezar. And that is that they said, the Tanaim said, that the prohibition to get on the Shek comes from Sinai. V'hu Sha'ata Tzarich Ladat Shekol Ma She'anu Nisharim Mimenu O osim oto hayom, eina osim, eina anu osim zot ela mipnei tzivui Hashem al yidei Moshe. That whatever we do today, we accept a mitzvot and we deny negative commandments. We don't perform the negative commandments only because God told us to do that at Sinai. The important thing is that we do the mitzvah Brit Milah because God told us to do it at Sinai, and not because Avraham Avinu did it and Yitzchak and Yaakov. Not because of that. That was PC, private communication. That was something God said, you do this. It's good for you, Avraham. But when God said that to Avraham that he should do the Brit Milah, he wasn't talking to me. But when God said at Har Sinai do Brit Milah, then God was talking to me. This is the great principle that the Rambam is talking about. Lo mipnei shehashem tziva v'kach lanevi'im shekadmu. This is not because of what God told the prophets in earlier times. Dugma lekach. I'll give you an example. Einanu ochlim eiva min achai. We don't eat a limb taken from a living animal. Lo mipnei shehashem asar al b'nei noach eiva min achai. Not because that when God spoke to Noach, he told him that there's a prohibition of eiva min achai, of eating the limb of a living animal. Lo mipnei shemoshe asar aleinu eiva min achai v'meshe nitztave b'sinai sheyishaer eiva min achai asur. But it's because Moshe Rabbeinu told us at Sinai that you can't eat eiva min achai. So even though the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, the seven mitzvot that all the people in the world were commanded to include the mitzvah or the prohibition of eiva min achai, we also do not eat eiva min achai, but not because it's one of the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, but because it was told to us directly at Har Sinai. This is an idea that the Rambam really likes. V'chein ein anu malin. We don't circumcise our children because Avraham malat atzmo v'chei bito. We don't do it because Avraham Avinu did it. We don't do it for that reason. Ela v'vnei shasher tzivanu al yedei Moshe lamol limol. It is God told us through Moshe Rabbeinu to circumcise our children, kibo shemal Avraham alava shalom, in the manner that Avraham Avinu did it, but not because Avraham Avinu did it. I know there's a question about the bracha. Don't ask. V'chein gid anashe einan nimshamchim bo acharei isu Yaakov Avinu ela tzivui Moshe Rabbeinu. Same thing is true about gid anashe, that we don't eat the gid anashe because Moshe Rabbeinu told us not to eat the gid anashe, not because it was a minhag that started the time of Yaakov Avinu. Hallo tir'eh amaram shesh v'od shloshes rei mitzvot me'emru lo l'moshe v'sinai v'kol elu mikhlal mitzvot. So there you have it. There's an idea. Yaakov Avinu, Yaakov, the Pasuk says, they didn't eat the Gid Anashe. What does the Rambam say that comes to teach us? The Rambam says comes to teach us that that's not me. That's only Yaakov Avinu. And whoever knew him, whoever was close to him. But I don't need Gid Anashe because God directly commanded me not to eat the Gid Anashe. And that for the Rambam is an important thing. It creates 613 mitzvot, otherwise there would be less, right? There would be mitzvot before that time. So that's one idea that I want to present. The second idea that I want to present is a Gemara in Brachot. So here's the Gemara. Amar Rabbi Levi Bachama Amar Shimon Lakish. Lo'olam yagiz adam yetzer tov al yetzer hara. It's kind of a largiz. Largiz means to annoy, to get angry, to anger. So what's the case? What are we talking about? There's yetzer hara, the Gemara says. Yetzer hara. What's yetzer hara? A little hard to define. We like that today. We like to talk in psychological terms. We don't like to talk in magical terms. In psychological terms. Everybody has an inclination to do things sometimes that he or she knows they shouldn't do. We'll call that yetzer hara. Somebody knows he shouldn't smoke, he smokes. Those shouldn't drink, he drinks. So he knows that he shouldn't. Whatever it is, but you do it anyway. So that we the language of the rabbinic language, that's called yetzer hara. In a modern language, it could be called anything else that you might find appropriate. So la'olam yagiz adam yetzer tov al yetzer hara sounds like it means when you know that the yetzer hara is getting at you, you know, just do it, just eat that, just do it once, you know, whatever your yetzer hara is. Yargiz, you get the yetzer hara annoyed, angry, upset with the yetzer tov. A lot of the yetzer tov, it says, don't do that, you know, be good, get stucker, learn a little Torah, go out, look at a sunset, you know, all of those things, that's yetzer tov. So la'olam, forever, you should have the capacity, you should be able to control the yetzer hara with the yetzer hatov. That's what the first line in the Gemara says. Shine'emar. And so, of course, the quotes are pasuk. The pasuk is found at the beginning of Tehillim. Regzu v'al techetal. Regzu. Do anger. Get anger. But don't sin. How does that work out? You anger the Yetzer Hara with the Yetzer HaTov, and at the end, there's a kind of compliance of the Yetzer Hara, apparently. That's what it means. Vim nitzchu mutaf. If the Yetzer Tov wins at this particular occasion, right, that's great. Vim lav. If the Yetzer Tov is not good enough, right, doesn't that strong enough to build the big Yetzer Hara, then yasok b'Torah. So Torah is not just a distraction, but it's actually a palliative. You know, you get into learning Torah, so you're not going to be so interested in the Yetzer Hara, because you got something else that you're doing. Shneimar imru b'levavchem. That's the continuation of the pasuk. The pasuk begins with the words rigzuv al techetau, then imru levavchem. And if the Torah study wins, so that's great. And if it doesn't, Yikra Kriyat Shema, the Gemara says, then you should read Kriyat Shema Shenemar Al Mishkavchem, on your beds. Im Mitzchu Mutav, right? And if Kriyat Shema wins over the Yetzer Hara, so that's great. V'im lav yizkor lo yom hamita shenema v'dom osela. That's what it says in the pasuk. V'dom osela. So if not, if the Kriyat Shema doesn't win, so just mention that, you know, death is nigh, and you know you'd like to get to Olam Haba in good shape. You don't want to get to Olam Haba doing an Aveira, you know, while you're doing an Aveira. So the Pasuk says, and this is what the explanation of the Gemara is, that there's a struggle that people have with the Yetzer Hara. And again, Yetzer Hara, we can restate that in any way that is appropriate. People have a struggle. People have a struggle with the Yetzer Hara. And we have ammunition that we can use against them. The first thing is Largiz Yetzer Tov al Yetzer Hara. If that doesn't work, we have Talmud Torah. If that doesn't work, we have Kriyat Shema. And if that doesn't work, we have Laskir Yom HaMitah. But the Pasuk, as it is explained in the Gemara, has this, like we have an arsenal. We have Yetzer Hara. It's like, you know, it's like we have inside of us all these terrible things, you know, viruses and bacteria and all kinds of things that could really do us in. If they could just get out of whatever's entrapping them. But we also have antibodies and all that kind of stuff that keeps it all in some kind of balance. It's only when things get out of whack that we're affected. But we're always carrying around this tremendous amount of miserable stuff inside of us, which our body is constantly fighting against to keep it, to keep everything in place. You're like, not let it, you know, you don't want those cancer cells to go wild, but they're there, right? It's not because you just somehow you manage for whatever period of time to keep it all in check. So we think the same way about Yetzer Ra and Yetzer Tov. The Yetzer Ra is like some kind of disease inside of us. And we have ways of keeping it in check, of holding it back. So this, so Rav Kook, when he was a young man, I think he was already the Rav of Boisk, but he was a young, he was really a young man. I mean, I can't even look back that far to see my, when I was that age. Too far back. Well, he was a young man. He started writing a commentary on the Agadot and Shas, starting from Brachot. And he had, you know, these notebooks. He wrote things in notebooks. He just wrote and wrote. He was very uncontrolled in his writing. He just wrote all the time. And eventually, they found the notebooks, naturally, and they published these agadic comments that Rav Kook wrote on Brachot and Shabbat, the first two masechtot of Shas. Right? And he went through one after the other, and he wrote a commentary. And what we're going to do now is his commentary on that agadita that I just read. Right? So now, so he starts, you see the highlighted part, Omar of Levi Barchava, blah, 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 1, 2, 3, the fourth line. You see the fourth line? Here the Rav Kook says something which I think is quite remarkable. HaKochot be'adam, HaTovim v'haraim. Does everybody has kochot, abilities, powers, talents? He says there are Tovim and there are Ra'im. There are good ones. And there are bad ones. Tachlitam lishtamesh bahem b'der hatova. So our purpose in life is to kind of use our talents in a positive way. B'der hatova al kein kochot haraim shebitzad ha-yetzara. Einze eitza tova lehachlisham ulimaata. So he says we have inside of us forces that could be called yetzer hara. We can do too much of this and too much of that, and we won't take care of ourselves. We won't do the right thing. But those same forces that cause us, that we call yetzer hara, because they do bad things either to us or to others, they also contain within themselves the power to do good, because they are, after all, they are powers, right? So let's say somebody is a very physical person, could beat up other people and steal their money. Well, wouldn't it be good if that same person is in a bank when the bank robbers come in and he beats up the bank robbers? The same koach that he uses for bad, he could also use for good. So he says, there is no such thing as a yetzer hara. There's only the power that is misused, which is called yetzer hara. That's what Rav Kook says. And therefore, alkei kochot ha-ra'im shebitzad ha-yetzer hara, ein zeh etzah tovah, I'm on the 2, 4, 6th line, etzah tovah la'achlisham ulamata. It's not a good idea to weaken them. You don't just shoot up antibiotics so much that everything in its way is going to die. No, not, that's not true. Ki lefamim yiyu nitzrachim letachlit tovah. Sometimes you need that power, which you call yetzer hara, for good. Right? Velo yuchal lehenot mi tuvam. And they won't be there. I mean, what happens to you if you knock them out? If you drive them away? They won't be there. Al kein Hatol shebehadrachot hu sheyiyu hakochot kulam bemiluam v'tovam. So really, what's the best situation that you can find yourself in? That all these powers inside of you, which we call sometimes yetzer hara, they're always there, right? Kulam bemiluam v'tovam. Rak shakochot hatovim yiyu Hashalitim benefesh veharaim yiyu kofufim tachat veharaim. I'm sorry. Let me read the line again. Rak shakochot hatovim yiyu hashlitim. Yetzer hara doesn't have to destroy Yetzer hatov. I'm sorry. Yetzer hatov does not have to destroy Yetzer hara. Yetzer hatov just has to control Yetzer hara. You have to be a person who could make a controlled decision at a particular moment. That's called Yetzer HaTov. Not that the Yetzer HaRa has gotten rid of you. So if you go to yeshiva, you know, and you want to practice the piano, and you say to the Rosh Yeshiva, do you think I could practice? He says, no, this is a yeshiva. Wrong answer. Right? But the right answer is that if you go to yeshiva, so that's your primary interest. But there are other things that could be good. They're good. It's good to have somebody in the yeshiva to play music and enjoy and play at weddings and simchas, etc. So the tov and the ra are not perfectly defined. And the yetzer hara, what we call yetzer hara, that means we just allow it to be yetzer hara. But if we controlled it, it wouldn't be yetzer hara. It might even be tov. Racha kochot atovim yu hashlitim b'nefesh v'ra'im yu kfufim tachad yadav. Then we have to get to a situation where the good in you is, it possesses the authority, is in charge. And that the ra'im, the things that are called ra'im, are just waiting for permission from the tovim to act in whatever way they can. Ki be'emet gam ha-ra'im tovim heima. It's like almost ishbitz. He says, ra'im, those are things ra'im. Ra'im is, if you control it, if you know how to use it, they're also tovim. Everything is tovim. Bishamram et gibulam. If you're able to watch over and create a barrier. V'hime mitzad teva adam. Akochot ha-ra'im hein ne'urim u'muchanim lifu'ula yoter me'akochot ha-tovim. And so generally speaking, the bad forces are more alive and willing to act than the good forces. Al-Kain, Yemoz, Yargiz Adam Yetzer Tov lorer ha-kochot ha-tovim shayu mukavim lepula ushlitim ala kochot ha-ra'im. So you have to act. Because of that, because the Yetzer HaRa is sometimes more active than the Yetzer HaTov, and the Yetzer HaTov is kind of like we're laid back and flower children and pithikim, you know, those are the people who don't do much. So the Yetzer HaRa gets in. So you have to be able to yargiz, that's what the Gemara said, you have to use your Yetzer Tov. You have to be able to activate it. You can't just be Tov de facto. Because if you're Tov de facto, you're allowing Ra to take a front seat in your train of life. That's no good. That's no good. So you have to activate yargiz Adam at Yetzer HaTov al Yetzer HaRa. Okay, so get back to the Gemara. Get back to Gemara Brachot. The Gemara Brachot says, "Lalam yagiz adam yetzer tov al yetzer ra," and Rav Kook explained that. He said, "This is something you have to understand. We have these tendencies. We can make good if we want to, but we have to work at it. We have to do something." And then the Gemara goes on and says, the same thing is true about Talmud Torah, and then further the same thing is true about Kriyat Shema, and then the same thing is even more true about Lazkir Yom HaMitah. So if we get back to our Psukim, I would posit the following. The Psukim tell us, not that Yaakov Avinu beat Saro Shel Esav, but that it is an indeterminate semi-victory. It's not finished, this battle between Yaakov and Esau. But if you would ask, what was going on? Why were there twins that were born to Rivka? Why Yaakov and Esau? Why this ongoing battle? So you might say, as the Gemara seems to say, that Yaakov and Esav become the model of reality for Am Yisrael. Then in some way, Am Yisrael is an eternal battle with Esav. Eternal. They never can get rid of Esav. They don't seem to be able to emerge victorious bitzurah chad stadi. That it's clear to everybody that they are victorious. But rather, Esav is a kind of a force that enables Yaakov to reconsider himself. What does Yaakov say? Yaakov says, "Oh, I'll let you go if you announce to the entire world that I received the brachot legitimately." In other words, Yaakov de facto understands that this battle with Esav is meaningful, that he has to assert himself, he has to become the Yaakov, the only Yaakov in the world. And while he bungled around in his earlier life in this way, one way and in the other way, now he's going to set it straight. Then there is this issue with the Gidon Asher. And what does Yaakov say? Yaakov says, "I know that the Torah, only the Torah can tell me the truth of things. And the Torah will always mitigate the assessment that people make. But right now, it makes sense to me that we should avoid eating the Gidon Asher. Even though I know that in the ultimate sense of things, it'll be God's directive and not the memory of Yaakov that will make a difference." Because Yaakov, after all, was learning about Yaakov. He was learning how to be. He was learning how to be. He was learning how to deal with the Yetzer Hara, which enabled him to steal the Bechorah, and that enabled him to come and deal in a kind of unsavory manner with the bracha that Yitzchak was going to give to Yaakov. So Yaakov was learning now about Yaakov. He was learning about Yaakov, and he was changing. And so the angel said, "I feel in you, Yaakov, Yisrael. I feel that you're a new person, that you're learning something about who you are and what you are." So that Esav became for Yaakov a learning experience, so to speak. Esav was not his brother who wanted to kill him. He was a brother, a force that had to be contained, that had to be controlled. Otherwise, Yaakov would have become like Esav. By Yizrach HaShemesh, right? This all happened when the sun came up and the angel said to Yaakov, I've got to go and sing the song of the Beit Mikdash Shemala, right? Kadosh, 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 Hashem Tzvot. Molokol Aretz Kud. I've got to go. And Yaakov said, "Yeah, it's true. He's got to go. He's someplace that I have not gotten to yet." And so you see in the Gemara, in the story that we read, you have those two moments, right? The Yetzer HaTov al Yetzer Hara and Kriyat Shema, right? Both of those moments of the four that are mentioned in the Gemara seem to be indicated in the story of Yaakov and Esav, because the time of Zrichat Chama, as you know, is the time of Kriyat Shema. And the time of Kriyat Shema, Birchoteh, is when we sing the song that the angels, and Saroshel Esav apparently was one of them, that the angels sing on high. So that this story is about the redefining of Yaakov by Yaakov. Yaakov understood himself. He understood himself that he had to do something. He was not like Avram Avinu, who came into the world and became perfect, nor was he like his father Yitzchak, who didn't know anything but perfection in his lifetime. He wasn't even brought up in an imperfect world. But Yaakov himself had to somehow come to the conclusion that perfection was within his reach. He could get to it. And that's what he learned from Saro Shel Esav when he came back to Eretz Yisrael and understood that he had to re-accept or reclaim the bracha that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him through his father at the time of the giving out the brachot. Have a good Shabbos.